This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
This is Burr Martin of the Burr Martin Experience Podcast, or Selfie Dad as I'm known around the internet. Now, I could tell you all about my podcast by throwing in some special effects or sound bites, but I'm not going to do that, all right? I'm a busy man, brother. I'm a C-minus internet celebrity. Look, I've worked in radio for over 12 years. I've produced about 15 different shows. I worked in a comic book shop. I've done stand-up, hosted events, and I was even voted Hero of the Week in the UK. My podcast is co-hosted by my wife, and we talk about anything and everything. And occasionally, one of our three kids will interrupt to tell us what's going on in their generation. We talk about celebrities, politics, pop culture, and news stories you've probably never heard about. All right, we're radio friendly and we try and keep things upbeat. So join me every week for the Burr Martin Experience Podcast here on the Pants Pending Studios Network. That's Burr Martin. So put a BM in your podcast catcher today and it'll be who wrote the poop joke? I am a C-minus internet celebrity. Which one of you writers wrote that? You go back and you work for Late Night with Chevy Chase. That won't fly here.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I'm like Jesus with better abs.
Get ready for the Social Hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is the Social Hour. On today's show, from the charity Giving Backpacks and Spokane Memes, Rick Clark. And now your host. Giving back is what his parents wanted to do after he was born. Deese Cassius!
Malib Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another great episode of the show. This show brought to you, as always, by Pants Pending Studios. Go to pantspending.com. Check out all the shows on the network. Go to Patreon.com/pantspending so you can get some from behind-the-scenes exclusive Patreon bonuses from across the network. We've been growing. We've added a couple new shows recently. You go check them out. I don't need to tell you about them. But you need to check them out. Here's one thing that's cool. One of them has to do with Godzilla, and that is pretty badass. So check it out, guys. As I said last week or a couple days ago, God, I guess I'm going, this used to be weekly, and it's screwing me up because now it's every couple days. So I got to, my brain's got to work faster. I need a week to reboot, man. I'm not getting younger. Go to Deese.com/calendar to check out all the dates. We've got some dates, live stand-up dates coming back. I'm happy to be back moving around doing some shows. So check it out, guys. As for today's show, we've got Rick Clark. Rick Clark is a Spokane native, great guy. He's done a lot for the community, so it was nice to talk to him. He's got a charity he's going to tell us all about called Giving Backpacks, as well as Spokane Memes. That's not a charity. That's just a funny page on Instagram. Check out the interview. Please give it up for the great, the magnanimous Rick Clark, everyone.
We've paid four of them now, and we have enough money saved up to pay about six more. So we're going to just try to keep it going.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got, the show at the Monroe Room, that's a spot in Spokane, and then that's broadcast. Where can people, it's a musician, new musician every week?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's broadcast live when and where?
So Saturday and Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Right off of the Monroe Room Facebook page.
Okay, Monroe. So, listeners, as you're tuning in, we are sitting here with Rick Clark. He's a Spokane resident, Spokane staple, does a lot in the area. He is the creator of Spokane Memes, as well as Giving Backpacks, a charity organization helping the homeless across the region, as well as some other things. And we're talking about
his music program they're giving back with some support going to local musicians to play music for you guys while we're, like you said, kind of thinking outside the box right now as we're kind of stuck in our boxes.
Right.
We can't really go anywhere. So we're going to jump around a little bit because I want to kind of figure, you know, are you from Spokane, Rick? Are you from Spokane originally?
Yeah, born and raised here, 1971 at Deaconess Hospital.
Okay, so you've been here a long, you know, you've your whole life here. You've probably seen it ebb and flow. A lot of things happen in Spokane. And, you know, what have you always been active in the community, trying to find things to, I mean, giving back in these ways? Or how did kind of you come to be doing what you're doing now?
That's a great question. I actually was not ever a big giver. I was born into severe poverty. So out in the valley, I was born. My dad left the house when I was one, never came back, went to get cigarettes, never came back. My mom raised me and my two sisters on welfare our entire childhood. So, yeah. We were always the one in need. So I was always in need of, you know, coats for kids or if there was Christmas presents at the Christmas Bureau or toys for tots, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I was always the recipient of all of that stuff. So my community basically took care of me my entire childhood. And what that did was it kind of left me feeling like I wasn't really worthy, that I, after years and years of being hungry and being poor as a kid, you start to kind of decide that that's just the cards that you were dealt and there's no way out of it. And
yeah,
it destroys your, you know, your motivation to believe in yourself. And so all that stuff led to me and my sisters all dropping out of high school. We all got on welfare and started having kids just like our family had always done in the past.
Sure.
It wasn't a big, you know, it was just a normal thing. And then, long story short, you know, 50 jobs at minimum wage because I had a GED led to a lot of struggles. And with a lot of, you know, with homelessness and with poverty comes drug addiction in the family, you know, domestic violence, mental health instability. So a lot of that stuff stems from just being super poor, you know? And so, just a few years ago, I was 44 years old living out in Medical Lake in a trailer. I was basically squatting in a trailer. My landlord wanted me out. I was avoiding my landlord. My Vista had just been shut off.
Right.
I had no car, no job. My marriage was completely shot. My wife lived in a totally different house. And I mean, it was the worst day of my life, honestly.
Yeah.
And I remember that day screaming at myself in the mirror. I literally, you know, like when you're a kid and you watch yourself cry in the mirror.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like, is this going to get me
that? Do that as an adult?
Yeah, right.
But I was really upset. And I was just like, I remember screaming, I'm not going out like this, because I honestly felt like I was getting older and I didn't want to be 50 years old and be known as that guy that was, oh, he was funny and he was a good guy, but he just always struggled. And I knew that there had to have been something else for me to be put on this earth. And I didn't think that poverty was my calling, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did the only thing I could do at the time, which was throw a Hail Mary. And I went on the bus and I took the bus to Spokane Community College to see if there's any way I could get back into school. And I was terrified. It wasn't something I was excited about because I had such a horrible experience with school. I hadn't opened a book in 30 years. So it wasn't a great day, but it was really all I had left, you know? And so, the crazy part is on my way to SCC, I had to stop downtown at the bus plaza where all the buses converge and I had to get on another bus. And I met a homeless man that day who was about my son's age. That's kind of the reason it really bothered me, is it stood out as he was younger.
Sure.
And I asked him if he was hungry and he said he was starving. And I took my last like $8 and we went into the convenience store and I bought him, I'll never forget. I bought him, he wanted Funyuns and a Mountain Dew. And I got a coffee and donuts and we sat out and we talked for about 10 minutes. And I learned that he was dropped off in Spokane. He wasn't acclimating well on the streets. He was getting beat up a lot.
Sure.
He was barefoot. Someone had stolen his shoes and his backpack. And I was like, that's crazy. I can't, for something that in me that day said, you know what? I'm going to put all my stuff that I'm dealing with aside and I'm going to focus on somebody who's struggling a little bit worse than I am. And I didn't think that was possible that day, you know?
Right.
And I said, you know what, if you can meet me back here in a couple of days, I'll bring you a backpack full of everything that you lost. And he was like, are you serious? Like, he was so kind and nice. And he looked scary, though. He was one of those scary homeless people that I almost didn't approach because it was just so uncomfortable. And I can't even imagine my life had I not approached this man, because that day single-handedly changed the entire route that my life took. And so we filled 25 backpacks with the help of people on Facebook in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
25 full backpacks full of everything you can think of, you know? And so my family, my kids and I, we just started handing them out downtown. And that was kind of the day that Giving Backpacks was created. That's the day that I decided it's a lot more important to give back than it is to keep receiving, you know, because I'd always been the one in need. And so, yeah, that led to a whole bunch of really amazing stuff.
Well, I mean, it's there's a lot to unpack there, but you know, let's start with I mean, how important it is. One thing you said that I think really hits home for me, and I think a lot of people should take into consideration, is, you know, that moment where you were kind of in your trailer and at your wit's end, you know, what alcoholics refer to as rock bottom, essentially. Yep. And how I think a lot of people have been in that scenario, but that's a really big crossroads in life where you have an option. You have two options. I mean, essentially you have two options, and it is to just go down that dark path and let it kind of take you, or make, you know, start moving and going in the right direction, which, you know, you did. You decided, I'm going to go to the community college, which turned into something else, but that step created a whole other avenue. I mean, and it's one of those things that it's incremental. I always kind of make this analogy of, like, you know, if someone said, you had to eat a Buick, you know, that seems like an impossible task because it's, you know, insurmountable. But if you grind it down and put a spoonful over your cereal every morning, eventually you'll have eaten a Buick, you know, it just takes that time of doing it. And as you begin to kind of give back and kind of work on things, the whatever, cosmically, universally, God, whatever you want to believe in, kind of things just kind of start to work and happen, you know?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think you'll appreciate this part. I had a couple hundred friends on Facebook at the time. So social media, you know, can be used in terrible ways. You know this.
Right,
I mean, you see just the horrible stuff that's happening daily on social media. But social media can also do amazing things. And from that day, so when I went home that day and I told everybody, my 200 friends on Facebook, hey, you guys, I'm a college student, because I did go on that day to register and I actually scored super low, but they told me people had scored lower. And that's all I needed to hear, is that I wasn't the worst person on the planet. You know. And so I came home and I said, and by the way, not only that, but I met a man named Jared today. Do you guys think you could help me fill this backpack? That was 5 years ago. And that all happened on, so everything was born on Facebook, because I kind of used it as a diary of what was going on. And so as I started every day experiencing these amazing things that started happening in my life, I mean, now I have 5,000 friends and there's a long list of people waiting to be my friend on Facebook. And I can't, because I'm tapped out. You know, I have 5,000 and I have to wait until somebody leaves and then I can add a new person. But it just shows you that, like, when you do good things and people see that, it inspires them to do good things, and they want to know. Everybody wanted to know what was going to happen next. And so it kept me focused. I mean, I was in my van, sleeping in my van in SEC parking lot the first 6 weeks of class, because I didn't have a home. And so something that day, you know, at school told me, you can take my car, you can take my job, you can take my wife, you can take everything from me, but you cannot take what I learn. And so my brain became like a sponge for the first time in my life. And I was never once did it cross my mind I was going to quit, which is crazy, because I quit everything in my life, you know? And so, and people started following that, going, this guy is for real. Like, I think this guy might actually graduate from SCC. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And every day is better still to this day than the day before. And I can't even explain it. People think I'm going through a midlife crisis. I call it a midlife awakening, because it just took so long to figure out, but I was terrified. Like you said, I was scared. and I could have easily kept going forward, but I think I would have probably died.
Yeah.
And it scared me enough to make me angry, and that anger turned into action. And I was surprised myself because I'm not a follow through guy. I never had been, because I was taught when you're in trouble, reach out to a community program and they'll fix everything for you.
Right.
So when you're raised like that, you don't barely earn your own keep because you don't even know how to do it. With my dad deciding he didn't want to be a dad, I had all women to raise me, which is amazing and beautiful and wonderful, but I didn't have a man there to tell me, look, there's going to be days you're going to have a shitty job and you're going to have to stay there.
Right. Yeah. You kind of just got to deal. Yeah. I mean, you know, it is important. I mean, there's not to discredit any gay or any other couples out there, you know, but like, there's something to be said about having a man and a woman raising, you know, all things being equal. I should say, right, all things being equal, you know, a man and a woman raising a child is, you know, yeah, kind of the way nature intended. You know, obviously there's definitely like gay or trans couples or whatever out there that are crushing it way harder as parents than a lot of
right.
Straight. But I mean, you know, but it's they definitely, you know, having those things are important for kids, you know, because they bring a man and woman bring different things to a child's life, you know, for a reason. And yeah, as great as being raised by women is and the things they offer, a young man especially really can spin out kind of not having that kind of extra
discipline. Yeah, I tell people, I mean, I can't work on cars. I don't know how to shoot a gun, but I can braid your hair like better than anybody because I was taught a lot of things by women, which was kind of eye opening as a man because they got treated crappy by men all the time. And so I got to see firsthand what pigs we are,
yeah,
really, you know?
Yeah.
And so it really helped me when I had daughters and stuff like that to
sure.
realize that, you know, it's not, you know, it was an amazing upbringing, but do you remember Big Brothers and Big Sisters back when we were kids? Like
yeah.
If you didn't have a dad, you could sign up for this program. It's funny, but horrifically sad at the same time. I signed up for a Big Brother and never got one. So 5 years, I think I was on a waiting list, which is just now as an adult, it's like, I can't even believe that they let a kid just sit there. And I was watching commercials of like men that would pick up their big brother, their little brother, and take him bowling. And I remember just looking out the window, like, I can't wait for my big brother. Well,
yeah.
I never got one.
When's someone going to show up? Jesus, that's terrible.
Just slap in the face.
well, it's really great to hear someone who kind of uses that energy and puts it in a positive way. You mentioned that giving backpacks as well as Spokane memes both started at the same time or around the same time.
Yep.
When did they start? What are we talking about time frame wise?
March of 2015.
Okay. So about just over 5 years. And in that time with giving backpacks, I mean, how many backpacks have you guys been able to put together for the community?
We've lost track at 5,500 is where we kind of stopped counting.
Okay. Yeah.
So 5,500 backpacks have been brought out onto the streets of Spokane, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about it, because we only have a couple thousand homeless people. So where is 6,000 backpacks going, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of my predicament now being 5 years into this thing, is like, do I want to just keep on bringing backpacks to the street, or do I want to do more to get people off the street? So we're trying to really work with agencies and put resources in the backpacks so that you're not just getting socks and a bottle of water and some food, but you're also getting material so that when you're alone under a bridge and you're struggling with whatever speed bump is in your way, we want to have resources in those backpacks so you can reach out. So
that's really important, because, you know, I mean, the backpacks is a great thing. It's a great start for people, but like you said, it's kind of a band-aid. It's just helping the symptoms, not really the root cause, the illness to begin with. So, you know, definitely one of my things, I mean, it started as a joke, but now I am genuinely running for mayor in this city, in the next election. And I think, you know, as far as like the homelessness in Spokane has always been an issue, it's getting worse. But to me, and like many other issues that I think are misdiagnosed, there's a big mental health issue that completely gets overlooked and completely kind of disregarded. And I think that's one of the biggest things, as well as getting them kind of, like you said, resources to get back involved in their community and actually kind of doing something, you know. So what are some of the things you guys are doing, kind of the programs or outreach stuff that are things you're offering them that could assist in this?
Well, we'll do anything. I'm like, we'll try to think outside the box. We've done huge car washes where we've raised a bunch of money and then taken that money straight down underneath Brown Street Bridge, which I'm sure you know which bridge that is. Yeah. It's like the worst bridge in Spokane. It's right by House of Charity where people line up and sleep. And
yeah,
I mean, there's urine and feces and everything under that bridge and people just laying in it, you know, like,
yeah.
And we will go down there and say, hey, we'll bring rubber gloves and grocery bags or hefty bags. And we'll say, if you guys want to give me an hour of just cleaning up under this bridge, we'll give you money. And so that money that we earned with the car wash, it was really cool to do that because they all jumped up and just got busy working because they knew that at the end of this, they were going to get 10 or 12 bucks. And we ended up giving everybody 20 bucks each, but they didn't know that, you know, they thought they were probably going to get 10 bucks and they got to earn that money with work, you know, they got to work and it made them feel good. They were just high fiving and it was back when we could hug. So we were hugging people and it was really amazing. And I know that I mean, to really have a program like that, I'd really have to do some homework and get into the liabilities and all that stuff. Cause you'd have to like pay people and stuff like that. But I know that Spokane has it's called Hope, where they drive a shuttle around and they ask people if they want to go to work and then they give them gift cards if they clean up the streets. And it's kind of a win-win because they clean up their own mess. So the streets are being cleaned up, but they also get to see what it's like to earn some money and see if maybe that's something they'd like to do more regularly, you know? But the mental health, my wife suffers from mental health issues and she's very articulate. She's an advocate for herself. It's almost impossible for her to get the things that she needs. And she's really good at explaining it. So imagine a homeless person who can't speak for themselves and they don't know what to say and they don't know where to go. It's really eye-opening how hard it is to get help, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's been a lot of shortcomings in the city. I'm not sure how familiar with this or where you stand on this, but you know, I think with the Guardians coming in, taking over some of the homeless shelters, warming shelters, it's actually been pretty detrimental to the, homeless, in the area, from kind of what I've gathered from what I forget the name of the organization that was running them before.
Jules.
Yeah. So it's, that's been an issue. And I think we've seen an uptick on the streets because of that. I mean, I've seen more people out and about. It seems to be a little bit worse. The thing is, I know people for the most part want to do something. Humans need kind of to feel like they're a part of something and need to feel like they have a purpose and they're accomplishing things. Obviously there's some mental illness and some drug addiction that just, you know, is so hard to overcome. But I believe that giving a lot of these people an opportunity to kind of start slowly reintegrating into society, or at least having some sort of responsibility, makes them feel a little more whole and makes them feel like they're a person and they get treated like a person and they respond to that, you know?
Yeah. I talked to a guy one time who he said nobody had talked to him in over 40 days. He just wandered the streets.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to, you know, people like us to really fathom that because we have friends and family. Even if I have a bill collector, at least there's somebody talking to me. You know? But like to really sit down and think like, wow, I've met people who haven't slept in mattresses, like in beds, for over 10 years. Those things, you know, really hit me right in the heart. And people ask me like, Rick, there's so many bad people out there that people take advantage of you. They're probably just selling the backpacks for drugs. And it's like, you know, that's true. I meet people who are really probably bad people. I'm not going to lie. I probably meet people who are on the run and people that have done really horrible things, but it's not my position on the spot right there to be judge, jury. I don't run a credit check to see if you're worthy of having a backpack. I give you a backpack with toothbrushes and toothpaste and deodorant, things that make you feel like a human being.
Right.
And some of them might throw it away. Some of them might not appreciate it, but you know what? A lot of them, it turns into them going from a tent to a year later, they're in an apartment and they write me and say that day changed their life. And
yeah.
As long as that's happening, dude, I'll do this every day for whatever time I have left, because to me that's worth it. So it doesn't have to, we don't have to do 100% but we got to do something.
Right. Know? Well, there's never going to be 100% success rate. And like you said, you can't go through a deep background check on everyone every time, you know, grab a social security number and print them and get a, you know, I'll come back in a week when I get this information and let you know you got this backpack, you know, you're trying and you're doing something, because I mean, otherwise, what do? We just sit back and everyone's pessimistic and, you know, yeah, there's some bad ones out there. So we just can't do anything. I mean, you know, that just doesn't equate. It doesn't help anything. Action in some form is better than, you know, inaction all the time.
And when you normalize it, like when you make it seem like it's okay to, like for me, I'm perfectly feel safe rolling down my window and saying hello to somebody who's standing at the corner with a sign. I don't feel like they're going to jump and cut my throat. I don't feel, and I've had 5,500 interactions. I've never been spit at, never been cussed at, never been, because people, you'd be surprised at how open they are to just being able to be noticed, you know, just being able to talk to them. And so I get a lot of messages from families that are saying, you know, we took your lead and we went out for the very first time and we handed out sandwiches and it changed my children's outlook. They've been acting, you know, normal for the last week. They realize that money doesn't grow on trees and that there's other people out there that are struggling. And so when you normalize it and you make it part of the culture here in Spokane, so listen to this, if you're going to be mayor, if you can make this like being kind and giving people a chance and not judging people, if that's part of your culture, it just spreads like wildfire. Right. And then pretty soon you live in a place that, is like other countries. I've met so many people from other countries that are like, we don't have homeless because we would never let anyone ever just sleep out on the streets. Right. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. That's, or fall through the cracks that way. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, you get, now I don't know if this is the case anymore in Spokane, and you may, I should probably find out. There at one point there was an ordinance against giving food to homeless people.
So I heard that when I was first doing my outreach 5 years ago, and I didn't make a big deal out of it. I didn't really announce that I was going to be down doing a barbecue under a bridge. I would just go down there and do it. And so my whole thing is like, I'd rather do things and then apologize later if I did it wrong.
Right.
and to ask for permission and get shut down. And I mean, in the 5 years, we've done it a million times and I've never gotten a peep from anybody. And so I think unless you're really putting on a production where you're doing it every week or the same spot, you know, you've got to have health codes obviously and stuff like that. But we kind of stay away from food. We just do these backpacks and and the food items we have in the backpacks are more like beef jerky and like granola bars.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask what is in the backpack. Tell us what we can find in one of these backpacks.
So I tell people when they donate items, because that's the biggest question, is what do you need? And I say, pretend that you're packing a backpack for your dad you just found out was homeless, or your son, you know, and that it really opens it up, because we stuff it with everything from reading books. So if they're bored and they're alone at night and they want to read a book, they've got books, they've got brand new socks, toothpaste, all the toiletries you can think of, fingernail clippers, flashlights, bottled water, blankets, sleeping bags. I mean, you name it, anything that could help them on the streets. And so each bag will vary because depending on what kind of donations we get. Oh, you might get sunblock. You might get a first aid kit. You don't know. Right. It just, people donate stuff and we put it in there and that's what we do.
What about the backpacks themselves? Where are those coming from?
Oh, so I'd love to discuss how we got those. So I got some national attention by Mike Rowe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Dirty Jobs, Mike Rowe.
So yeah. So after SEC, I was on honor roll the entire time I was at SEC, and my son and I graduated the same day. He was graduating from the Spokane Falls, and which is a total proud dad moment, you know? Yeah. And so all of a sudden our family now is talking about school, which we've never ever talked about because nobody ever went to college. And he said the day that we graduated, he goes, Dad, with your backpack program and your good grades, you could go to Gonzaga. And I remember telling him, yeah, why don't I try for Yale and Harvard while I'm at it, you know? And we laughed, and I was seriously feeling that way because I was like, no, Gonzaga's for other type of people, not people like me. And
right.
It was still that whole I'm not worthy type of mentality. And so I thought about it and I was like, you know, I'm trying to teach my son to shoot for the stars, but I'm only willing to go so far. So I sat down and I applied for Gonzaga, and part of my letter that I had to write, I explained basically everything I've told you, that I've, you know, been in this town my whole life. I'm trying to break the cycle of poverty in my family. that kid that's been hungry his whole life is knocking at your door. Please open it. And that's how I ended my letter, was like, for the love of God, let me go to the school, you know? And so 3 weeks later, I got this beautiful manila envelope in the mail. I opened it up and it said, not only have we been waiting for you, Rick, but here's $34,000 to get started. So I got this massive scholarship to get me started, and I knocked it out in 2 years. I graduated just last May with my bachelor's degree, which just still blows me away that I'm even saying stuff like that.
Wow, congratulations.
And the last week of class, Mike Rowe surprised me and flew into Spokane and paid off my tuition at Gonzaga and filled up the McCarthy Athletic Center without me knowing it, brought me into the gymnasium, and the whole place, it was like a basketball game was going on. The whole place went crazy. They had those big heads that you get printed out. One of my head, you know, they were passing it around. And he paid my tuition, and then he gave me $70,000 about worth of stuff for my storage units. So he bought me these backpacks that are from City Pack. They're from Chicago, and they're built just for people living on the street. So they have built-in ponchos. They're waterproof. They're made of ballistic material, so they'll literally last. You could run over it with a truck a million times, and they'd be fine. They lock to your body at night, so nobody can steal them, which is a big, big thing.
Uh-huh.
And they're just like the Cadillac of backpacks. And so we went through 500 of those that he gave us, and then we ordered another 400. So right now my storage unit has about 300 of those backpacks, along with just millions of donations that people have given me.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. I mean,
yeah, it was unreal.
You know, that's another great example of, you know, starting on a path and just watching it kind of unfold when you're, again, it sounds cheesy, but when you have pure intentions and you're just moving towards things that are, you know, helpful and good, things tend to just kind of work out.
Right? That's my message. I love to tell people is like, you can break the cycle in 5 years. That's ridiculous to me. I thought it would take generations to break a cycle like that, but I literally did it in 5 years. And now my daughter's enrolled in school and my wife went to the community college for a quarter. It's like, whoa.
Right. Yeah. That's great. I mean, that's great. That's a huge accomplishment, especially in 5 years. That's a big, big turnaround in a great way. I mean, really inspiring. A lot more people should understand that mentality that things are very capable. Everyone's capable of doing it. It's hard. There's going to be obstacles. Starting is the hardest part. Just deciding to start. And especially, you know, I mean, you probably experience this with your upbringing. You don't really know where to start sometimes. You don't know who to go to get, you know, because sometimes you need a little bit of insight or like the right, you know, being pointed in the right direction at least. But in this case, it's just taking that bus to SCC and kind of who do you talk to and kind of say.
And one part that's really interesting is I honestly don't know if I would have finished all of this had I not stayed connected on Facebook and social media. And I know that sounds really weird, but I was posting all of my updates. And so people were just, like I said, people were following it by the hundreds and then pretty soon thousands. And then I pretty much felt like I can't let these people down. Like I've started this thing and there was times I wanted to quit. Like there was times I was so like burnt out on school that I was like, well, maybe I can come, you know, a lot of people stop and then they'll come back years later. But I honestly kept saying, well, Rick, you've started something. You can't just stop now. I mean, you've got people, you've got so many people in your corner. And so that kind of made me more accountable by talking about it more. So I didn't keep it hidden. I was right there telling people what my test scores were. I was, you know, writing a lot of jokes about how it was being 50 years old and going to Gonzaga with 7,000 20-year-olds.
Right.
I mean, that alone, you could do a whole stand up on that. That was hilarious. But, you know, I kept myself out there letting people know what was going on so that it would hold me accountable. And it got me to the finish line.
You know? Yeah. Well, and that's what, and really that's what matters. You got the end, you did it, you graduated. And what did you go to school for? You just got a BA or what did you general?
So I got a bachelor's degree in communication studies. So, I'm not good at science. I'm not good at math, communications.
Me either.
Communications was just right up my alley. It's storytelling. We all do it. Everybody you ever meet is telling a story. And so it's just a good way to really focus on, if you're going to make change in the city, you need to be able to sit down with people with lots of different views. And so I needed to be equipped and ready to deal with people who didn't think like I did. And so Gonzaga was amazing in that way, because every classroom was really safe place to say whatever you wanted. So we had kids that were grew up racist that would basically say it in the middle of class, but it was a way for us to say, look at, you know, let's open up the lines of communication. Maybe that's not the way you want to go. And so people, you know, and I think like if you're going to do big things in a city like you, if you're going to be a mayor, you need to be able to sit down with people who don't like you and people who love you and people who don't think like you do. And you need to be able to still make progress. And so that degree was really important to me.
That's a really, I think, timely thing you just said, and important, is the ability to talk to people you don't agree with. I think is some nuance, kind of an art that's been lost with a lot of America, especially recently as it's become more polarized. We have, people kind of pick their side, whatever side that is. I'm not gonna say one side is bad or good. They just pick their side. And if you are not on their side 100%, then they can't even talk to you. They can't be friends with you. They can't listen to something you've been on. You know, you have people, you know, specifically just because of the field I'm in, you know, I hear a lot of people talk talk a lot of shit about Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan's podcaster, he's a comedian, and, you know, an MMA sports announcer. And, you know, he's self-proclaimed. He'll tell you, he's like, I'm not an expert in anything besides fighting. You know, I'm kind of an idiot. Yeah. But he wants to talk to people, and he wants to talk to people he doesn't always agree with, or who have, you know, unfavorable viewpoints. And I think even that is important, because it allows you to look at things abstractly. And even if, you know, you may never have, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to change your mind and make you a fucking Nazi or whatever. I don't know. But like that idea that you can't even sit down and talk to someone with a different viewpoint cordially and, you know, address issues and maybe figure out, well, how do I make you understand my viewpoint, or how do I understand why you think your viewpoint, and maybe try and find a way to massage it so there's some, we're closer to the middle, you know?
Well, we're also scared of the way we say things too. So I'm terrified to say the wrong thing and not even, you know, like right now is a really hard time to sit down and talk, because people don't want to say the wrong thing. So they just clam up and they keep regurgitating the same stuff over and over again. And that's not getting us anywhere. And the older I get, I've definitely realized that it's way more important for me to listen than it is for me to talk. So I grew up, you know, my 20s and 30s, I was a talker. I thought everybody needed to hear my wisdom and all that stuff. So I wouldn't listen to people. And so now, through my Gonzaga experience and just being humbled by the things that I've learned on the streets and seeing people struggle with, I'm way more ready to listen now. But oh my God, all day long on Facebook, you read the things and it's like, yeah, I'm listening, but I want to scream because I want to say something, but it would take me 2 hours to really go through the history of why what that person said is absolutely fundamentally wrong. It's like, so I just kind of try to play nice. And yeah, the minute I try to say anything, I'll lose 30 followers immediately. If I just say, I made one post during this entire Black Lives Matters movement. I made one post about, in the very beginning, I said, as white people, maybe we should just be quiet right now and let some people talk. And that's all I said. I didn't say what I felt or, oh my God, I had 30 people. Yeah. Drop me on Facebook. And like people were, one guy called me out, like one, it turned into like where he wanted to fist fight me. And I'm like, okay, that's going to be weird. You're like 70. I'm 50. I'm like, we're just going to meet and fight. Like,
right. Yeah. This, the average age of this fight is 60.
Not good. And I've been in two fights in high school. That was a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where you really can't, you know, and it is unfortunate because, you know, I'm not going to restrict this to either side. It happens on the left and the right. You know, something you say can literally get you canceled, you know, to the point where like you no longer are a viable platform or get to have an opinion. And, you know, people are entitled to opinions. A lot of people have bad opinions. I probably have bad opinions sometimes. But like, we don't give anyone room to, again, think, engage with other people and have other forms of thought. Like if you're just talking to the same people with the exact same thoughts all the time, it's just some blowhard echo chamber and you never actually get anywhere, you know?
Exactly.
I find it very interesting to talk to people that, you know, maybe have dynamically different viewpoints than I do. And I can do it cordially. And, I'm not going to necessarily come out. I can talk to a guy who's a white supremacist. I'm not worried about coming out as a fucking, as an SS troop at the end of it. It's just a conversation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've
been wanting to ask you, I love your post and you touch on, touchy subjects, but do you think because you're a legitimate comedian in this town, people know that you're making people laugh, their jokes. Do you think you get away with getting a little bit more risky, or do you find it, are you constantly putting out fires?
I think I get a little bit of leeway being a comic. Also, I think people know, I think I've been doing it for long enough where my style's always been a little subversive where I think, it was kind of like
start doing it. Yeah, exactly.
It was kind of a slow boil, like boiling a frog. So, yep. Being a comic does help. Also, I think a lot of people genuinely know where my heart is at. But also I kind of, I'm unapologetic about it too. And I always have been where, I want to talk about hard subjects. I'm going to talk about things that are maybe taboo sometimes, even in my comedy. And I've never really backpedaled or apologized about it. I think talking about hard things and, I'm kind of either we can make fun of everything or nothing.
Right.
We don't get to pick and choose like, well, Rick's moral line is this, so I can't offend him. But Steve over here's moral line is this. So like, who am I catering to? But more recently, there has been a little pushback at times. I've lost some followers recently because I've been pretty outspoken about the Black Lives Matter thing and all that. I'm Mexican. I grew up in the South Central in the 80s. I lived through the LA riots, like all that shit. I did this. And I'm like, dude, and when people want to say, well, I don't understand the protests or the riots, I'm like, I don't agree necessarily with the rioting or like the destroying property, but I also get it. When you are such a marginalized and unheard voice for so long, yep, anger comes out in weird ways.
Imagine your kid getting slapped in the face by a bully every day at school. And then when he's 17, he snaps and beats the shit out of the teacher and all the kids. And like,
right. Yeah.
If you're the parent, you kind of get it, but because it's not connected to you directly, you're like, well, those guys just need to calm down. It's like, no, they've been living with this daily. Like, of course there's going to be some anger, and sometimes it doesn't make sense, and sometimes it's not legal and all that stuff. But Jesus, you can only hold stuff in for so long.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly it. And I've tried to explain that to a lot of people. And I mean, obviously there's just some bad people sometimes, and there's opportunists and things like that. But for the most part, it's like, anger comes out in weird ways and frustration. And I get it. It's a horrible system where they're kind of forced into. And, I made this point to people a while back where I'm like, hey, listen, the Revolutionary War wasn't won through peaceful protests. Like, sometimes you got to burn some shit down.
Right.
So, I've kind of been unapologetic about it my entire life, and I stand in that. And I think the minute you kind of give and be like, well, I'm a little sorry, or maybe I shouldn't, people just jump and pile on. And I'm just like, what? I know where my heart's at. I know, I'm an advocate for any marginalized community, and the things I've done and how I feel. So you can't tell me I'm not doing my part or willing to go the extra mile for things. So I'm like, it doesn't really matter what you think. At the end of the day, so I know.
I've definitely learned that with being in the public eye and getting national attention and getting more attention, there's a responsibility with having a lot of followers and people that look to you for whatever wisdom or guidance or whatever that you want to give them.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of responsibility with that. And I didn't understand that because my entire life, nobody gave two shits who I was. And I was a struggling broke guy for 44 years. And now I'm not that guy. And so I have people that are like, kind of look to me, and just like you, people look to you to bring them joy during these hard times. They want to laugh. I have people that look to me to bring positivity. So it definitely has, got me to lay off of, because I used to joke about a lot of stuff on Facebook. I'm embarrassed sometimes. I'll get a memory of like 7 years ago and I made fun of like a homeless person or something like that. I'm sure. Like, oh my God, like I'm the guy that actually is one of the biggest homeless advocates right now in Spokane. But yet here's 7 years ago, I wasn't that same guy, you know? Yeah. And so that whole responsibility thing is really important, because you can do a lot of good if you have people that want to listen to you, but you know, you got to make sure that it is good stuff, you know? And so I'm constantly trying to pump out the positive, because there's just so much negative. It's like, for every negative thing I see, I mean, I want to put a couple positive things out there just to combat the negative, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, there definitely is a balance in that. And I think it's, you know, how you do things and how you phrase things. I'm also, like I said, a big believer of what, intent, I guess, you know, what yeah. people intend, and what's in their heart. Like if, you know, if someone's an arsonist in their heart, or like someone says, it tells me that someone's an arson, but I've never seen them strike a match. And like, no, in their heart, they're an arson. I'm like, I kind of need to see some evidence before I'm going to call them an arson.
Hold on to this lighter for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let me a little wait a few, see what happens. If nothing's burned down, I think you're good to go. But yeah, I mean, it is a weird line to walk. Again, I think it's a balance. You can kind of talk about challenging things in an interesting way, and yep. still spread positivity. I mean, I definitely know I will go a little to the edge to push people, but I think it's also important to look at taboo subjects, and through the prism of comedy is a great way to do it. You know, being uncomfortable helps you grow, you know?
Yeah.
And
just as well as anybody, like a lot of the pain in my life comes out as humor now. It's the best right. humor I have, because yeah. but at the time that shit was not funny, you know.
Sure.
But you know, I find that to be the case a lot. It was so fun going to Gonzaga and like getting to be in classrooms with kids that were basically born and bred to go to Gonzaga. So they've known nothing sure. other than school, and then the minute school ended, they went straight into Gonzaga. And so they've never even experienced like a job yet. They hadn't experienced really living on their own, and here they are miles away from home. And so to be able to be in those classrooms and be able to spit a little bit of truth, like, okay, when you guys get out, you might not get a $40 an hour job. You might actually have to go work at Starbucks or something. Right. And they're looking at me like, what? Like, it was amazing, because they were all my kids' ages. So I got to really spend time letting them know, like, okay, the world's going to kick you in the nuts. Like, I hope you have a cup, because right. this is serious stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, that's a good position. I think that type of, you know, being positive and, you know, but also having a pragmatic view on reality is very important. And I think, you know, coming from the background you did, it makes you forces you to live reality on reality's terms very quickly.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of use that like you understand the way things are. You can still have hopes, but you also understand the way things are and can deal with those. And it yeah. doesn't necessarily break you as easily as it can other people who've only had idyllic things happen, you know?
Right, right. You'd be really proud of me, actually. Before I started this 5 years ago, I did stand-up comedy 3 times, and it was something I always had on my bucket list.
Okay.
I wanted to try it. It was at the Blues at the Bend.
Yeah, okay.
Uncle D's, right, was up there, right. yep. upstairs.
Uncle D's upstairs, that's right.
Yep, so I remember I killed it. My first 2 times, I killed it. It was the funnest thing I ever did. And then the 3rd time I went out, I didn't get 1 laugh, and it like destroyed me. Like, it was in a little checkerboard bar, I think, on Sprague.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
a little,
it was the checkerboard. Yeah, it was a checkerboard yes, bar.
And
yeah.
the only people in there was the guy working and then 4 other comedians. And so sure. you guys, yeah, comedians don't really laugh for other comedians. So nobody laughed. And yeah. I was just like, mortified, but I had so much fun the first 2 times that I did it. I was like, that was pretty awesome. So
But to be fair, that kind of trajectory is not uncommon for people who do comedy. First time out, you kind of stumble into doing okay or doing well. Second time, you can kind of feed off that momentum. And usually the third time, it's a pretty significant dip. Like, that's kind of the time a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, I don't want to.
We're good. Yeah, I'm out.
Have you thought about doing it again?
Oh, yeah. Now that after the experiences that I've had and stuff, I'd love to get back out there and do like an open mic. I just don't know where is Comedy Club really the only open mic place?
There are open mics almost every single night of the week in Spokane, or there were. Right now there's a ban on live entertainment, so yeah. There's none. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, one closed. Friday used to be at Chan's Red Dragon downtown. Then there's no Saturday. And then there's, I don't know if there's a Sunday. I used to run a Sunday one, which I quit doing a while back. But yeah, so there's one like at least five nights a week.
So how long have you been doing it?
Comedy in some form or fashion. God, I used to say like for the longest time I said like almost 10 years. And then I realized the other day I've been doing comedy in some form or fashion for almost 15 years now.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of have an odd path. I did, a lot of improv and sketch comedy. And I was actually doing comedy writing when I lived in LA. I was doing very little stand up. Then, you know, I was doing it occasionally, and then I moved to Spokane and I was doing it occasionally. And then about probably closer to 5 years ago, I started doing stand up pretty significantly, like the main part of my comedy career, I guess you'd call it. And then
I was so excited to finally get to meet you at the Inlander Award ceremony, and then
you
weren't there.
I was not there. You mentioned that in the message when we were talking the other day via Messenger. I'm sure a lot of people are aware, and I know you are, Rick. I've kind of got this ongoing teasing battle with the Inlander because they didn't invite me to the party. I found out about the party because there were pictures online. And I'm like, so I messaged the guy who called me and told me I won and interviewed me. And he's like, he's like, I'll have my boss call you. And then they never called me. So I haven't even gotten my award yet. I haven't even picked it up.
Dude, you know what's so sad about that is that when you go there, it's this big fancy party and most people had been nominated every year, like Breakfast Boy, you know, like the Dave, Ken, and Molly, and then Tom Sherry. So they've been doing it for 20 years and they just kind of walk through it like they own the place. And it's like, oh my God, I felt so weird being there. And there's first, second, and third in each category, right?
Yes.
So in my category, Hometown Hero, I was second place next to the Gleason.
The football player.
And so, but first, you were first place in comedy, and your little award was there with your name on it because everyone's awards were on this table, and you had to go over and pick up your award. Well, if you got second or third, your award, there was no award. It was just you just got second or third. Yeah. So, yeah, your award was there, just sitting there all by itself. You weren't there.
I didn't even know about the party.
It's out there somewhere. There is an award. I saw it.
So it exists. So, yeah, I ran into someone like 6 months ago at, I was at like Andy's, I think. And I was taking pictures of Art. My friend's Art was up there. And this woman was like, Deese? And I turn around, I'm like, yes. And I'm like, who are you? And she's like, my name's Samantha. And she's like, I work for the Inlander. She's like, your award is on my desk. I was like, oh yeah. I'm like, I should get that sometime. I kept telling them, I'm like, I'm going to wait until next year. Pick up both my awards is what I kept telling them when I win again. And then they dropped the category this year. I think I gave them so much shit that they dropped the whole category.
They're like, this isn't worth it.
Yeah. I'm like, whoops. I fucked it up for everyone.
Become mayor the same day you could get your award.
Yeah.
Or something.
With my key to the city.
So
how,
oh man,
what, now you won for Hometown Hero. You won second place for Hometown Hero in Spokane. Is that right? In the Inlander?
Yeah.
So, and then what, yeah, tell me about the, so you got the invite, you got an invite obviously to the party, and it was just kind of, how was the party? Did I miss out?
Like I said, I was like the new kid on the block, so I didn't know anybody. And my wife and I, she's like, you need to go mingle. You know, my wife's really big into like, when we get into these groups, you need to go network. And I'm like, I don't want to. So we just sat like at a table and we drank free beer. So there was like a bunch of free beer and wine. And
there you go.
They didn't make any announcements really. You just mingled and you picked up your ward and then you left. But it was the best. It was all the people that work at the radio stations and the TV people. And so it was kind of cool because you got to see a lot of like local celebrities, but
yeah,
I didn't know anybody. So I just kind of sat in the back,
hung out. Yeah. I wonder if at any point, maybe if the offices ever open up, I can actually get my award. we'll see. It's probably buried somewhere in like that final scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark where they're just rolling away that cart into like a labyrinth. They seal it up. So I don't know, but
time capsule. So years down the road, somebody can,
yeah,
they'll open it up and be like, who's this guy?
They'll find it like this asshole, huh? So in addition to, you know, the giving backpacks, you also do Spokane memes. Let's touch on that a little bit.
So that page I started literally just because I've been in Spokane my entire life. So there's just, to me, there's a lot of funny stuff about Spokane. And so I started making my own memes and just putting them on this page that I created. And I had like 10 people, then 20 people. And then like in a month I had 100 people and I was like, this is kind of keeping people liking it. So I'll just keep doing it. And then people started sharing the memes and then it just exploded and it went to like 50,000 within the first like 3 months. And
Jeez.
Then it kind of capped out at like 62,000. And then now it just sits there. Like it's really because of the algorithms for whatever reason, it's hard to get people to go on there, but we still get a lot of, I mean, every post, our rule is if a meme can't get 100 likes in the first hour, we delete it because they get so many likes. I mean, we have memes that get like 5,000, 6,000 likes and shares. And now I've got like a group of like four or five of my friends that are admins, so they can help me do it. But we try to keep it clean. So we don't post all the Hilliard and meth memes that everybody sends me. And, you know, a lot of people send just horrific memes that aren't even funny. They're just tearing down different neighborhoods and stuff like that. And so we've kind of made it a plan just to make it family friendly. And, you know, it's worked out because I think a lot of people appreciate that. It's just good humor about potholes and the North South freeway never opening up and the weather. People love talking about weather and drivers. So we do a lot of those memes, but you'd be surprised how many people send us like memes about meth and hookers and Hilliard.
How many memes about Rachel Dolezal did you see?
Oh my gosh. I'd have to go back and look, but it was a lot.
Did you guys post any about her?
I think, we do have a few for sure. Gosh, a lot of like when, remember when, what's his name? Oh God, what's his name? He didn't know where Gonzaga was. He's like he has a talk show.
Oh, was it,
who? He thought Gonzaga was fake. Remember?
It wasn't Colbert. It was,
no. Oh God. Why can I not? But anyways, Kimmel.
Oh, was it? It was Kimmel. Yeah, it was Kimmel. Yeah.
So we got a lot of fun out of that one. So like anytime we make the national news, it's usually for something embarrassing, but like, that one was kind of a fun one because it wasn't Rachel Dolezal or
right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what, to be fair, I always say like these Catholic schools or like things like that. If you are kind of a dummy from some other region, I didn't know where Notre Dame was until I was like 28 years old. You know, like I didn't fucking, how do you know where Notre Dame is? You know, like, yeah, I can figure out where North Carolina Tar Heels play at, you know, but like, you know, I'm like, I'll be damned if I knew what a Tar Heel was, but like, I didn't know what these things, you don't know. Or like,
well, Gonzaga is a weird name. If you say it, you've never said it before. Gonzaga. It sounds like bazooka or like your, you know, gum or like, I don't know, it's a weird sounding Gorgonzola or something. It's like, okay, Well, so I could see why people don't think it's a real school.
Yeah. No, I mean, not only that, but like, I mean, how many people actually know? I mean, obviously in the last 10, 20 years or so, people, you know, the name, the city of Spokane is more ubiquitous and known, but prior to that, it's like, who knows where, name another city outside of Seattle in Washington State. You know, it's like, right? People maybe know Auburn or not Auburn, but wherever the heck Kurt Cobain was from. Auburn? Yeah, Auburn.
Olympia? No, yeah, something.
So it's like, yeah, people, I mean, yeah, Spokane, Washington. It's like, okay, well, it's this big, even if you knew of Spokane, Washington, it's not the type of place you would think a really good basketball team would be from.
I know.
So it's very.
It was so fun going to school there and like literally walking right by basketball players in the hall that were like, my face was right at their crotch. Like, what in the hell? Like, how can you be? Like, I don't see people that tall ever, except at Gonzaga, and women that were 6'5". You know,
yeah.
I was like, holy moly, this is amazing. It was cool.
It is nice about, I mean, I say it a lot, but you grew up here and have done a lot for this city. I moved to Spokane 11 years ago in March from LA. And I lived in the Northwest briefly in my mid-teens, so I knew of Spokane. I'd played Hoop Fest, things like that. But I mean, I never spent a ton of time here besides Hoop Fest. And I really fell in love with the city. I think it's got a lot of potential. It's got great stuff. I mean, like, you know, it's a hidden gem with things like Gonzaga and Hoop Fest and the weather and the beauty, but it still has some big city.
A river runs right through our town, like right through the middle of downtown. Like, nobody has that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, the city is, I don't tell anyone about it because I don't want anyone else to move here.
But like,
but I mean, we are very lucky in the place we live in. I think I'm really proud of Spokane, and I like, you know, people like you and other people who are doing things to make this city better and improve on it. And that's part of the reason I stayed. And, you know, what I've been trying to do is just be active and being a part of, you know, in 10 years, looking back and being able to be like, oh man, look at all these things like that have happened and how much better it is. And the things, you know, people have done to make this city even better.
And there's a lot of bad things that happen in this town, and there's a lot of negative stuff in Spokane, but like, you're right. Like, when you surround yourself with other people who just want good for everybody, like I don't, even my worst enemies, I want them to be okay. I don't want bad things to happen to people. And I think that separates people, because there's other people that genuinely want people to hurt, you know? And I've never understood that. But surrounding yourself with like-minded people is amazing. I have the most amazing friends now that I just never even knew were out there, because before social media and before this whole thing happened in my life where things started to change, it was just me and a small group of people that I knew, and I didn't know anybody else out there. And there's amazing people out there doing good stuff every day.
Yeah, and that is one of the nice things about social media, although it can be detrimental. It also can connect people who are trying to move in the same direction. And even if you're in different regions, you can really network and pull stuff together in a way you couldn't before. And you know, the ability people should, you know, people are and should continue utilizing that. And, you know, if you put it to good work, man, there's a lot that can be done.
The best example I can give people, there's been a lot of examples, but one time a shelter over in Brown's Addition, they house pregnant teenage moms people, women who have just had babies. So it's a house, it's a big mansion in Brown's Addition, and it's full of people that are young, that had kids and that are homeless. And so they reached out to me and said, we really need at least one air conditioner, but two would be amazing. These girls are burning up in here. It was a couple summers ago. Mm-hmm. And so I went on Facebook and I went to my different platforms and I just said, hey guys, we're trying to raise money, or if anybody has an air conditioner, we're trying to get two to this mansion that has 8 bedrooms. And within 12 hours, we had 12 air conditioners donated from people around Spokane. And that's, you could never do that without social media. I could never go door to door and get 12 air conditioners, but we did it in just a matter of hours. And that stuff happens all the time. And so if you pull together and you use social media in a way that can do stuff like that, you can fix a lot of problems. You can move mountains. You know?
There's a lot of power in it for sure. So I feel, I feel like I'd be remiss without asking, how has this whole COVID thing affected your outreach programs, or even the homeless in general, as far as you know? Has there been much you know.
So yeah, now we can't, our main thing was we would gather in groups and we would fill backpacks. So we can't do that. We would take those groups of people and go out and give groups of homeless people backpacks. So we can't do that. But I am able to get, you know, three or four people together. We go to my storage unit. We fill as many backpacks as we can. And then I put them in my van. And then I'm always driving all over town every day. So I just hand out backpacks at the lights and I hand out backpacks on the corners where people are asking for change or whatever. And if I see somebody that's definitely in need, I'll pull over and get out and introduce myself and give them a backpack. So we can still give backpacks out and people can still donate. It's just that we can't take a lot of things because now I don't know what has COVID on it. I don't even know if the shampoo you give me is going to have COVID on it. Right. So it's yeah. Right now we have enough stuff in our storage unit to last a year of just giving out backpacks. So we're not really big on the, you know, getting the donations right now because we have plenty, but I just feel bad because there are a lot of people out there that are homeless that aren't feeling good and they don't know, they don't have health insurance. They don't know where to go to get tested. And
yeah,
they're just hoping to God that some outreach group can find them and get them the help that they need, you know?
Right. Well, hopefully, you know, at least what you're doing is getting the people out there and getting, doing something for the city, which is great. Tell people, I know you said you're kind of full up on donations now, but where can people donate or where should people go to follow you, social media, keep updates, et cetera?
I can't hear anything now. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Are you still,
that's weird.
Still any audio?
No, I can't hear anything.
No audio? Oh, let's see. Let's see.
Why is that happening?
It's slowing down.
God dang.
I mean, let's see.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
Oh, let's see. I can hear.
I don't know what happened.
You. Oh, let's see. Let's see. Okay. Let's see. Shant, one second.
Sorry. Shanna. Sound like a lunatic if you can hear me, but I can't hear you.
Can, and social media. Are you hearing that? Yeah. You see that?
Okay. People can donate, on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Giving Backpacks. I have a website, gbpacks.org. And then you can just hit me up on Facebook, Rick Clark. I have a public account that's open to anybody, so you can actually just send me a message or yeah, those are the three spots. And Spokane Memes is on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, guys. So we've got some connection problems, so we're going to get Rick out of here. But guys, make sure and go to check out the social media that he shouted out there. We'll put links in the section of the description of all this so you can find that. But I want to thank Rick for being here. Make sure and help him out. Donate, guys. It's a great cause. And we're going to get out of here for this week. For the Socialer, I am Dees, and for Rick, thank you very much, guys, and we will see you next week.